One of the major challenges the UK and the world faces is understanding how best to value the importance of the cultural sector and its significant connection to other sectors, and how to invest in it accordingly, both financially, but also in the people who operate within it. I'm delighted that we have real experts on this matter to probe those issues further. And I'd like to introduce, first of all, Patrick McKenna, CEO of Ingenious Media, Chairman of the Young Vic, Trustee of Nesta. And Patrick will give a short keynote, and then we'll discuss some of the issues further in conversation with David Kershaw, CEO of MNC Saatchi and Chair of the CFP. Patrick, over to you.
Thank you, Martin, for that introduction, and a very cool, I suppose, London welcome to you all. I'm very pleased to be here this morning to give this introductory talk. But given the title of the symposium, I feel a little like an imposter. And that's because most people know me for my role on the commercial side of the creative industries, rather than in the arts and culture sector per se. However, it is true, as Martin said, that I am chairman of the Young Vic Theatre. I've been on that board for some 12 years, and I just love my association with the arts. I suppose, as leadership features in the title of the symposium, I am a little qualified to speak perhaps on leadership issues and challenges arising out of profound change. And that's because my own company, Ingenious Media, was born from very significant change, disruptive change that has taken place across the media sector over the last decade or so, namely in digital technology, regulatory change, and the consequential changes in consumer behavior, which actually take quite a long time to fathom out and to be delivered. Before that, in my days as a partner in the accounting firm of Deloitte, I ran the media and entertainment group there. And I managed to develop that practice based on a simple recognition that there was going to be significant change in the balance of negotiating power between the creators of content and the financiers and distributors of that content. And I was very pleased in that period of time to bring about really new terms of trade between the makers of content and the distributors of that content. Of course, incidentally, as everyone knows, the record industry has had substantial problems as a result of that disruptive technology in recent years. But I'm definitely not one to be sentimental about the past. In the old days, artists and musicians were treated as virtual house slaves by the giant international gatekeepers. It is only relatively recently that power has begun to swing in favour of those who create content. Maybe this is a subject we might explore later in questions, because I promise it promises to transform what we call the creative economy. And then in 1989, I went into business with Andrew Lloyd Webber and became chairman and CEO of the Really Useful Group, as well as Andrew's business partner. This career move was also on the back of fundamental change. And that change was to transform the Really Useful Group from its origins as a passive licensing company into an active rights-owning global production company. That change also involved the delisting of the company from the London Stock Exchange, which was in itself a highly unusual transaction at the time, the only other one of a similar nature being Richard Branson and Virgin. So all in all, change is something I'm very familiar with. And here's the first theme that I'd like to underline this morning. I'm one of those people who see disruptive change as an opportunity rather than a threat. But, and I say, and this is the key point, I like to bring about change to be in control of the process rather than have it forced upon me. And right now, in the arts world, there are considerable challenges to be faced, partly brought about by the global recession and partly driven by cuts in public funding. This is a feature of the landscape in most countries that are represented here today, apart from France, I understand, where the plan is actually to increase funding. Perhaps we should all move ourselves to Paris. Where more commonly, as in the UK, public funding is being cut back, inevitably there is a sense of anxiety, as there always is at times of great change. But disruptive change also brings with it great opportunities, and those organisations which are able to embrace change will emerge stronger and more efficient than ever before. In preparing for a recent talk to a group of cultural leaders on the subject of change management, I came across a couple of definitions of the term change management, which I really quite liked. The first one was the coordination of a structured period of transition from situation A to situation B in order to achieve a lasting change within an organisation. This definition seemed to encapsulate pretty much all types of change programmes, but was attractive to me because of the expression lasting change. This is the type of change we are really talking about when we discuss change management. Another one I liked was minimising resistance to organisational change through involvement of key players and stakeholders. This one had a particular resonance with me because it addressed so much of what business and management is really all about, people. Deciding on grand strategy and reinventing financial models is really only one part of the job of management. Perhaps the trickiest part is implementation, and more particularly, managing people so they are persuaded to act in a unison way towards a common objective. In my opinion, the greatest challenge now facing cultural leaders around the globe is how best to guide their organisation into a new funding environment which is characterised by lower dependency on state subsidies and handouts. Why is this change so significant? It's because what we are seeing is not simply a short-term phenomenon caused by the recession. It is, in my view, part of a long-term trend. All arts and cultural organisations, therefore, need to not only recognise this change, but to embrace it. Leaders will need, in most cases, to change the entire culture of their organisation. Most will need to review the nature of their relationships with business and commerce. They will need to develop new strategies, re-engineer their management and skill sets, and above all, generate new revenue streams. In other words, significantly new businesses and operating models will be called for. When I recently made all of these points to a group of cultural leaders, they nearly all agreed with me, but they were quick to point out that it's a lot easier to devise a new strategy than it is to implement one. This is, of course, correct. The challenge of organisational reinvention often necessitates the recruitment of new skills, people from different disciplines, and positive attitudes and outlooks. Recognising the need to travel down this road is often the biggest barrier for an organisation to overcome. Finding the right people to help fill the gaps at a time of profound change is difficult, not least because it may not be at all obvious where those people are going to come from. Their backgrounds may well be quite different to those of other members of the organisation's board or of the executive. Embracing change means stepping outside one's comfort zone and resisting the temptation to apply traditional remedies to yesterday's problems. It also means taking risks. In short, it means adopting a more entrepreneurial mindset. Another important factor in the arts business model of the future will be partnerships, something that Hilary touched upon earlier. And by partnerships, I mean partnerships between art and commerce. And this is my second theme for the morning. Building partnerships between different kinds of talent is something that I've been involved with for many years. And I can testify that where these partnerships are built on genuine mutual respect, they will deliver great benefits. In the wider context of the UK's creative industries, I've often observed that we are lucky enough to have an abundance of world-class creative talent, from film, theatre, music, television, and the games sectors, to advertising and marketing services, where David Cadbury is, of course, a huge player. But in general, we do not have the business talent, in my view, to match the level of creativity that we have. This has held back the economic development of the creative industries here, mainly because of an acute inability to attract investment, caused in turn by a shortage of good business leaders. Although we have made great strides in the UK in developing our leadership skills, thanks not least to the work of the Cultural Leadership Programme, I think in this respect there is nonetheless a real parallel to be drawn with the cultural sector. Too many organisations have still not fully faced up to the challenges of a world in which the competition for attention, custom and revenues will be more intense than we've ever known. However much better arts organisations have become in developing the commercial side of their operations, in future they will need to do still more. This means bringing more business, financial and entrepreneurial skills at both board and executive level. This is an impressively international event, so I'd like to conclude with an observation about global relationships. In recent years, the British Council has pioneered the development of an international young creative entrepreneur programme and taken it to Indonesia, India, China and Poland, amongst other countries, with fascinating results. This programme has not only helped create unique networks of ambitious young business leaders in a variety of sectors, including music, film and television, but has also raised interesting questions about how such relationships could be turned into real business, thus accelerating the growth in world trade of cultural goods and services. This, we should all recognise, is an area of global trade that has a completely benign carbon footprint. Given that a lot of the traditional boundaries in the arts, culture and entertainment space are now dissolving, it may be that events of this kind can further help build relationships that will bear fruit on a number of levels. By sharing knowledge and learning across the networks represented here, it might perhaps be possible to help lay the groundwork for delivering new forms of cooperation and competition between cultural and creative businesses around the world. Perhaps the future starts here today at the V&A. One thing at least is certain. Anyone who thinks they can anticipate what the global creative economy will look like in 5 years' time is sadly deluded. 5 years ago, Facebook did not exist. We can all play a part in the future. And thank you very much for listening.